From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. From coast to coast, voters are casting their bid for the next president of the United States. 24 states and American Samoa are holding either caucuses or primaries today for one or both parties. In addition to counting the votes, candidates are paying attention to a different number, the number of delegates they walk away with. Here to spell it all out for us is NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving. Hey, Ron.
Good to be with you, Farai.
So let's get down to the basics. What the heck are delegates? Why do they even matter?
The delegates are the people who are actually going to go to the Democratic Convention in Denver at the end of August and to the Republican Convention in the Twin Cities of Minnesota in the beginning of September. These are going to be back-to-back events. And the delegates at these two conventions will have a party, you know, four nights on national television, and they will also get down to the business of actually nominating the Democratic and Republican candidates for president. So everything else that goes on, January, February, March, all these events, primaries, caucuses, conventions, all of that leads up to choosing the people who will go to those two cities and do the actual voting to choose the nominees.
So how do these folks get chosen? I'm assuming it has something to do with elections.
Yes, it does. You have to volunteer and you have to file with the party and you submit a petition and so forth and you sign your name and you want to be a delegate. You also get associated with a party because the delegates are not just with a party but with a candidate because the delegates are not only going to be a Democrat or a Republican. They're going to be, for example, a Hillary Clinton Democrat or a Mitt Romney Republican. So they're then going to be allocated when the votes come in from each party's primary or caucus according to how well the candidate did. And the rules are quite different from state to state and from party to party, the biggest difference being that the Democrats always try to make the results of their elections and primaries and caucuses as proportional as possible, splitting the delegates as close to the ratio or fraction of the actual popular vote that each candidate got. The Republicans use the system a little differently. They try to winnow it all down to getting a candidate as quickly as possible by making a lot of their states winner-take-all, which means if you win by one vote, a plurality in a given state, you take home all the delegates from that state, bang, right there.
Now, if we talk about Nevada, you had a situation where Senator Clinton got more of the popular vote, but Senator Obama got more of the delegates. How did something like that happen?
Well, the Democrats have several different kinds of delegates. That includes, for example, what are called superdelegates. That's about a fifth of the total Democratic convention. And they are people who are already delegates by virtue of their office. Say for the President of the United States, if he's a Democrat, Vice President of the United States, if he's a Democrat, they're automatically delegates to the Democratic convention, former presidents, members of Congress, governors, members of the Democratic National Committee. So that's the first category. The next category are the people who are allocated on the basis of these primaries and caucuses that were having, and they split into a couple of different kinds as well. For example, there are some that are chosen statewide, and it's proportional by the results statewide. So if candidate X and candidate Y split the state vote pretty much 60-40, then candidate X gets 60% of the statewide delegates, and candidate Y gets the other 40%. Then there are a third group who are chosen district by district. And when I say district, I usually mean a congressional district, a district that elects a member of Congress. But in some of the smallest states where they only have one seat in Congress, they do it by legislative districts from their state legislature. And in each district, there is an allocated number of delegates. Might be two or three, might be as many as six or seven. And that allocation then is awarded on the basis of how the vote went just in that one district.
I'll be honest with you, this sounds extremely complicated. How did we get to a situation like this? I understand it has something to do with the framing of the Constitution, but how did we get this situation?
It's actually democracy in action, if you want to call it that. I mean, the parties are in charge here. It's related to the Constitution. It's related to the electoral system in general, but it also has to do with each party pursuing its own ends. And after 1972, where there was a major fracas at the Democratic National Convention over whether or not they were going to seat the California delegates all for George McGovern, in other words, unit rule, winner take all, or whether they were going to split them proportionally among the several candidates who were running in California that year. And after that big fight, they finally decided, look, we're not going to have any more winner take all here in the Democratic Party. We're going to make this as democratic, small d, as we possibly can. We're going to break it down not only by the statewide proportion of the vote, but also district by district. We're really going to get down into the grassroots here and make each individual Democrat's large D now, feel as though he or she is really making his or her vote count.
What about independents and third parties? You know, there have been some notable runs, Ralph Nader, Ross Perot. And how does our system account or not account for people who are outside of candidates who are outside of the two major political parties?
Now you are getting back into the Constitution, Fry, because in the Constitution, all it says is that there will be candidates for president and that the Electoral College will decide who actually has won the presidential election. It does not contemplate political parties. It does not assume that there would be Democrats or Republicans or Whigs or anybody else. So once we get outside the realm of the two major parties that have dominated our politics since the Civil War, once we get outside of that into independent land or third party or fourth party or fifth party, they can either have a convention or an individual candidate, say a Mike Bloomberg with pretty much limitless personal resources, the mayor of New York, he can go out and get on ballots on his own all around the country. And in fact, he started to do that in places like Texas where they have really early filing deadlines. So in case he does decide to run, and he hasn't decided, or so he says, if he does run, he's going to be on the ballot because he's already up and running to get on those ballots. And then people will have choices beyond the Republican and Democratic binary choice.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that the two political parties, the two major political parties, have reshaped over time how they choose these representatives, which then choose their representative for the race. How has this movement by the political parties set them up differently? You mentioned a little bit about the winner-take-all system versus proportionality. What are these parties trying to do, if you can kind of think in the form of a large institution?
Yes. If you go back a generation or two, both parties pretty much chose their presidential candidates in what was often referred to as the smoke-filled room. In other words, you would go to the convention. There would be several people who wanted the job. They would be campaigning in a variety of ways. And they would have some delegates who they considered to be their delegates because there had been a few primaries. And there were a few primaries in certain states that go way back in our history through the 20th century, Oregon, Wisconsin, a few others. And these people would then get to the convention, some of them pledged, some of them not pledged, most of them people who were party professionals or already office holders, and they would kind of get together at some point or another in some back room and decide which one of the presidential candidates would be strongest, and that person eventually, after several ballots, would get the nod. Back a couple of generations ago, that's what both parties did. But then increasingly the Democrats, then followed by the Republicans, started having more and more primaries and requiring the delegates to the convention to be chosen by primaries or caucuses and have a much more direct connection to the popular vote, to the people, to the members of the party and to independents as well who took part in the primaries. And that made both parties much more democratic operations, again, small d. But the Democrats, large D, capital D, pushed it a lot further than the Republicans. The Republicans want to restrain the representational nature of the system a little bit so as to reach a conclusion a little faster. And that's the big difference now. I think in Super Tuesday voting today, for example, it's quite possible that one Republican candidate will get enough votes around the country that he'll become the nominee more or less de facto. On the Democratic side, though, there's really no chance of that. The proportional splits that I've been talking about, the breaking the vote down and making it representative of the vote, that's going to divide the delegates between the two parties, between the two candidates on the Democratic side.
So there are people on both sides of the major party system who have dropped out, and they have delegates. What happens to their delegates?
There aren't many, really. It's just a handful in both parties. And what will happen to those delegates is after their candidate is officially out, John Edwards, for example, is not officially out. He's just suspended his campaign. But once they are officially out, then they can either be assigned by the candidate that they have voted for previously, the John Edwards figure, if you will, or someone like Rudy Giuliani on the Republican side who has one delegate. They can either be assigned by that candidate or the candidate can release them to make their own choice, which is the more typical.
Can people make their own choice anyway? What if you're sent in as a Clinton delegate or a Romney delegate or McCain delegate or any candidate's delegate? Can you at some point just say, well, actually, I've changed my mind?
The state laws bind each of the delegates chosen in their state primaries for at least a first ballot, sometimes for a second ballot or further. But generally speaking, we haven't had multiple ballot conventions over the last half century or so, so the first ballot is sufficient. There are those superdelegates that I mentioned at the very beginning, about 20% of the Democrats and just far fewer on the Republican side, just basically three from each state, who are free agents, and they can do whatever they want. They can say they're committed to one candidate or another, but when they get to the convention, they're free to change their minds.
You mentioned that this could be a de facto moment for the Republican Party, probably not for the Democrats. So what do we have coming up after Super Tuesday?
Quite a bit, actually. There are several events, primaries and caucuses, being held around the country this coming Saturday in Nebraska, in Louisiana, in Washington State. And then next Tuesday, we have what we call the Chesapeake primary, which is Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. Those are three pretty substantial states dominated by the Baltimore, Washington, Richmond urban corridor, if you will, a metropolitan area. And then on February 19th, you have the state of Wisconsin, which is a traditional primary state, used to be in April, and has frequently been very important to particularly Democratic candidates. I think of John F. Kennedy in 1960, whose win in Wisconsin was very significant for his drive for the Democratic nomination in 1960. So that could be a big one. And then we get back to some mega states on March 4th, when the mega states of Texas and Ohio, critical states, both top 10 states, will vote. And then into April, on April 22nd, when we get Pennsylvania, that's the last of the top 10 states in population to vote.
All right. Well, who knows how much say they'll get, but we'll find out a lot more as the election results unfold. Thanks a lot, Ron.
My pleasure, Farai.
Ron Elving is NPR Senior Washington Editor, and he joined us from our NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Hey,